And as you've been hearing this morning, NPR has been reporting for the last few hours on the latest in the efforts to apprehend Saeed Kouachi and Sherif Kouachi, the two main suspects in the terrorist attack in Paris on Wednesday, in which 12 people were killed at the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. The suspects are holed up in a printing company near Charles de Gaulle Airport, and they are holding at least one, maybe as many as seven hostages. There is at this hour a second hostage situation in a kosher grocery store in Paris. It appears that at least one gunman is holding hostages there as well. French police have identified a man named Amédée Coulibaly and his former girlfriend, Ayette Boumediene, as suspects in the shooting of a police officer yesterday. It is suspected that Coulibaly is the person holding hostages in the kosher store in Paris. Joining me now in Studio A is Kevin Kelleher, known as Cal to his legions of fans around the globe. He's one of the most frequently published political cartoonists in the world. His work has appeared in more than 100 publications, including The Economist, where he has been the resident cartoonist since 1978. In 2013, he published a book called Daggers Drawn, 35 Years of Cal Cartoons, which features more than 300 of his award-winning Economist creations. He's also the political cartoonist for the Baltimore Sun. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be here.
So a sad day for the world, and particularly for people in your business. Did you know any of the cartoonists who were murdered on Wednesday?
I did have the opportunity to meet several of them. We're a pretty small community, the cartoon world around. We maybe have several hundred practitioners around the globe, and we gather in events and festivals. And France is actually one of the centerpieces for this. They have events on an annual basis, and cartoons get together.
And you were, for a time, president of an organization, and you're still a member of an organization called the Cartoonist Rights Network International. Tell us about that group and what they do.
It's a group that basically tries to protect cartoonists in trouble around the world. And it may surprise people that, you know, cartoonists can cause such trouble. And actually, in light of what happened yesterday, I think this is something that we've been very aware of, the kind of trouble cartoons can get in. But many people are just learning this for the first time, that, you know, cartoonists are often jailed and tortured and murdered for their work because you're right in the front line of freedom of expression. And in societies that are far less free than where we live here in the United States, the fist of authority comes down right on the cartoonists, because I guess, you know, pictures can go places that words can't.
Talk a little bit about that. I mean, the sensitivity that you have, you know, having been in this business for such a long time. What is it that what do you think it is that makes these cartoons resonate, you know, on a sort of visceral level, in a way that an essay or an op-ed would not?
You know, I said a really interesting question. A lot of people have been asking, and a couple of years ago, a guy named Victor Navrasky, who is the former editor of The Nation, upon retirement, set upon to do a book about this very subject, because he found that cartoons in his years of being a journalist were things that elicited the most amount of reaction from people. And he had a couple of interesting conclusions. One, he said that when someone submits a cartoon against someone, that there is no answer for it. You can't retaliate with another cartoon. Mm-hmm. And words don't quite fit the frame. The second thing is that pictures somehow go straight to the brain and etch themselves in a very strong way, in the way that words don't. You know, cartoons are often absorbed in about 5 seconds, and they give a whole host of messages. And cartoons also deal with ridicule and caricature, and so that the force driving them is one of, I guess, negativity. And so people respond in a visceral and often unhappy reaction to them.
It's been a difficult time period for journalists in general, more journalists imprisoned or killed in the last year than in any time in recent memory. And we should also, you know, point out that, for example, today in Saudi Arabia, a young man named Rauf Badawi, who was he's been incarcerated in Saudi Arabia since 2012. He's sentenced to 1,000 lashes and 10 years in jail. He was flogged 50 times. They're going to do this once a week until he gets up to his 1,000, because he started a website called the Liberal Saudi Network. You know, so we've got state-sponsored suppression of free speech as well. you know, in this climate, do you think it's going to dampen the resolve of cartoonists and editorialists around the world? We note, for example, that the New York Times and CNN and other major news organizations are refusing to show the images that Charlie Hebdo is planning to publish next Wednesday, when that first edition after this the terrorist attacks comes out. People are making judgments about this, and it seems to be directly related to this act of terrorism.
True. I think that we are going to be facing some very challenging times ahead, in part because now with the internet, there's no such thing as local news, because whenever you do a cartoon or an article, it goes global. And as a result, people have to are becoming aware of what that might imply as far as, threatening their lives. But I've also been heartened by the reaction of the past 24 hours by the world and by a lot of leaders to this terrible incident that took place in Paris, this rallying to the notion of freedom of expression and understanding the value that it has, and also, you know, the incredible role that cartoonists have in this. You know, we are so incredibly lucky that we can say what we do in this country, and we can sit in this room today and not worry the police are going to march in. And in the history of mankind, it's actually been just such a small period where this is allowed to happen. And I believe that when people see it under threat, that they're going to rally and fight for it. But there's going to be a lot of skirmishes and there's going to be a lot of battles. And we had a setback yesterday, but I think that it doesn't mean it's going to carry on in that direction.
Je suis Charlie. Huh? Mm. The T-shirt will be the thing that we remember perhaps more than the murders themselves. Well, Cal, thank you for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
And we'll see you the next time. Cal's latest book is called Daggers Drawn, 35 Years of Cal Cartoons. Come to our website for a link to more information, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us this morning. On Monday, Sheila will speak with former Senator Olympia Snowe from Maine, and theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review the latest production at the Single Carrot Theater. Hope to have you with us on Monday morning here on Maryland Morning. Until then, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend.
Maryland Morning is an original production
of your public radio,
WYPR,
in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Matt Purdy
and Jonna McCone.
We have production help from
Estelle Klein.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
Coffee for our guests provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. On the web at ZEKESCoffee.com.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. On this day in Maryland history, 1971, the Maryland Terps basketball team upset number 2 ranked South Carolina. Maryland led 4-3 at the half, final score 31-30. We're back Monday. Hope you will be too.